Welcome to the new radio series of programs Codes of Warfare. My name is Melanie Farrugia and I will be your hostess during these programs, which are being brought to you by the History of Art Department, University of Malta, and under the coordination of Dr. Giuseppe Scambri Bonacci, who is also the Artistic Director for the Mlina Biennale 2015. The series will be focusing on exploring design and designers. The topics will be extremely varied, from luxurious objects and famous designers to everyday objects. The first two or three programs, I will be introducing the topic of design, as well as explore some famous designers and iconic designer objects. Later on in the programs, I will be introducing you to various topics with the help of experts in the particular sectors. What is different about this program is that you can also view images of the objects that we will be discussing during the programs by accessing a website built specifically for this program. The website is as follows: www.melfarrugia.wix.com/savoirfaire. This can also be accessed through your mobile phone by going to Programs tab and clicking on the program number accordingly. Today is, of course, program 1. I will repeat the website for you. It's www.melfarrugia.wix.com/savoirfaire. Wix.com is spelled W-I-X.com and savoirfaire, S-A-V-O-I-R-F-A-I-R-E. I will be introducing the subject of design by reading an abstract from this very interesting book called What Makes Great Design by Susie Hodge. Susie Hodge is the author of over 80 books, many of them focusing on art and also on design. And she also lectures regularly on art and design in various institutions, amongst her other works in the art sector. Everything around us has been invented or designed by someone. From the chair you are sitting on, the mobile phone you're using, the lamp next to you, the shoes you're wearing, the perfume bottle that you just sprayed, and the glass that you're drinking from. But what makes a great design? This can be one of those eternal questions, like what is beauty? Of course, there are many opinions, but in general, it might be safe to consider that the following make an exceptional design, that is, a successful design should be versatile and practical. It should function exceptionally well, looks good, and it should be reasonably priced. To summarize, a great design is when everything, particularly form and function, comes together in one object that fulfills its purpose in every way. Design is a major part of a society's culture because it shapes the ways in which we live and work. Our appreciation of whether a design really works is affected by many factors, including our culture, background, surroundings, perceptions, age, nationality, and race, as well as by any personal knowledge of the elements that go into making a design aesthetically functional. Some designs attain a cultural significance as time passes, whereas others can be diminished by changing outlooks or political situations. Although objects such as the wheel, the pestle and mortar, and the quill were designed centuries ago, the profession of designer as we know it today began to develop only in the 18th century, as a direct result of the Industrial Revolution. Previously, there were inventors and craftsmen who invented and produced items to assist the smooth functioning of society. The technological advances that occurred during the Industrial Revolution allowed a large variety of goods to be manufactured that were affordable objects, and concurrently the middle classes became increasingly wealthy. The need to meet the demand for certain man-made items and consumer goods led to manufacturers employing people to draw and plan products. By the 19th century, further new inventions, technologies, materials, and techniques had an immense impact on everyday aspect of the human life, and the profession of designer became even more specialized. There are a number of designers who don't embrace the concept of mass production, but most designers do. Some relish the challenge of working with new materials and production methods, which gave them scope to create innovative items and a chance to sell countless versions of one design, as we will see throughout the coming programs of savoir-faire. Other designers preferred to look back to the pre-industrial era, drawing inspiration from traditional shapes and materials, and finding beauty in the natural world and handcrafted goods. From the 19th to the 20th centuries, productive partnerships between designers and manufacturers resulted in many original designs, as we shall see, for example, with the brand Alessi and the designers that they engaged. As consumer demands started increasing, further new inventions and designs were produced. The market became particularly competitive, pushing designers to new boundaries and pushing them to be more creative and innovative. The test of time, as with most things in life, sets apart a good design, and many of the best ones continue to be used decades after they were first produced. Some designs of objects used in everyday life have never been bettered, like the safety pin designed by Walter Hunt and Le Parfait jars, for which the designer is still unknown. We will be discussing these Parfait jars later on during this program today. Due to technological advances and the changes in a person's needs, some once brilliant designs can fall out of favor or out of fashion, either because new inventions and technologies have forced it to become obsolete or because its shapes, materials and form appear outdated. One such example can be the Walkman, which was superseded by the iPod, and nowadays one can hear all the music he wants directly from his phone. When designs really work, same as happens with art and perhaps movies, they are admired for their timelessness, of their construction, function and aesthetic appeal. During the first few programs of savoir-faire, I will be introducing you designs from a wide range of products, from lamps to watches, chairs and furniture, handbags, lighters, sunglasses, a variety of versatile and iconic products and objects that can be considered as classics. The designers of these objects also come from very diverse backgrounds, eras and countries, and who have experienced vastly different cultural, social and political situations, and have worked in different circumstances. Also, one has to keep in mind that some objects were designed keeping a particular consumer in mind. Some of the most iconic designs have been produced by designers who have pushed the materials or production methods beyond accepted boundaries. They may have been irreverent towards the past or simply audacious in their approach. Some of the designs that we will be mentioning were chosen because of their originality and for being amongst the first of their kind, appearance, form, function, popularity and versatility. A question to be taken into consideration is, when does invention or beauty take precedence over design? Some of the objects will be considered for their great functional aspect, while others purely as a decorative facet, such as the Fabergé egg. Items that are designed with the main aim to adorn a space can perhaps be designed more freely than objects, such as cookware, in which form has to follow function. But do these restrictions make a difference to the greatness of a design? Together in this series of programs, we will discover why these designers created their particular products when they did, and how each designer worked, what materials were used, and how their contemporary consumers reacted to these new inventions. We will see how the production of a successful great design requires the full understanding of the materials and processes by the designers, along with a clear consideration of how the product will be used by the consumer. At times, the design of an object takes years and years of experimentation to be finalized, as the designers are determined to devise methods or to manipulate materials in original and practical ways. Some succeed in their endeavors, whereas others abandon the task and go on to design something completely different. Several designers have unwittingly discovered innovative techniques or uses of certain materials, whereas others have consistently produced a varied range of inventive, effective, and avant-garde products. Not all designers have attained fame and fortune from their designs, and some designers remain virtually unknown. Designers are not confined to a single field of expertise and may produce exemplary designs in a number of different areas. Karl Elfner, who is the creator of the iconic Swiss Army knife, which we will also be discussing today, was originally a designer of surgical equipment. Ludwig Mies van der Rohe was a successful architect, however, he also designed a very popular chair that we will be talking about in one of the programs, called the Barcelona chair. The most innovative, beautiful, and influential designs have often developed from prevailing social, cultural, or political influence, such as art movements, new technologies, and the two world wars. For example, although the minimalist design style is different from the art movement's philosophies, the simple contours and limited colors of minimalism emerged in design from fine art experiments, and the style was particularly popular during the 1980s. Different nations have made particular contributions to design. German designers tended towards functionalism, whereas Italian designers have generally been more flamboyant and colorful in their designs. Scandinavian designers traditionally exploited their indigenous crafts and materials, while American designers, particularly of the 20th century, embraced such things as machines and pop art, appealing directly to consumers and the expanding commercial world. Designers today use a great range of materials and production methods than ever before. Manufacturing processes have enabled them to create more designs to meet increasing consumer demands. Despite all technological advances, however, the principles of design remain the same, as they always have been. Designers analyze the requirements of potential users, seek dexterous solutions, and produce attractive, practical, desirable, and affordable objects. This is the same approach that was taken by Josiah Wedgwood and Thomas Chippendale in the 18th century, by Michael Tonnet and Louis Vuitton in the 19th century, and by Jonathan Ive and Tom Dixon in the 21st century. Each design began as an idea, prompted by desire, ambition, or even frustration. And when a design really works, it does what it was designed to do, beautifully and without fuss. Today we will be mentioning various iconic objects, some luxurious and some that are used in everyday life, like Le Parfait jars, the iPhone, the Swiss Army knife, the Juicy Salif citrus squeezer, and the Chanel No. 5 perfume bottle. Before we start, I would like to remind you that you can follow images of what is being mentioned by accessing the site www.melfarrugia.wix.com/savoirfaire. Access Programs tab and go to Program 1. And I also remind you that the site is also accessible from your mobile phones. So let's start with the very familiar jars called Le Parfait jars. These are the jars that we use every day to conserve and preserve various kinds of foods, and one practically finds them in every kitchen. Usually they are made of glass, they have a rubber ring at the very top of the jar, where the lid will rest securely and sealed with the use of the convenient metal clasp. Until the early 19th century, food preservation processes were not as easy as today. In 1810, a certain Nicolas Appert, a French chef, discovered that enclosing food in airtight containers preserved for a much longer time than using any other methods known at the time. Based on this idea, an unknown designer produced jars made of sturdy pressed glass with flip-top lids that were sealed by rubber rings and when shut formed a vacuum. In early 1930s, Le Parfait Company, established in France, started manufacturing these jars in various sizes to be able to store different kinds of foods in a natural way and without losing flavor. The design of these jars have hardly changed since they were first designed. However, nowadays you can find them in also different colors. Let's remain in the kitchen and we will now discuss the very stylish citrus juicer called Juicy Salif Citrus Juicer, designed in 1990 by a French designer called Philippe Starck for the Italian brand Alessi. Philippe Starck commented that when he designs, he does not consider the technical or commercial aspects so much as the desire for a dream that humans have attempted to project onto an object. The name Salif derives from the French word salive, which means saliva. And the juicer looks like everything but a juicer. Three long legs are supporting the body of the juicer. To me personally, the first time I saw it, it resembled to some stainless steel alien tripod, really, which has just landed. And definitely it is something that one can use as a decorative ornament. And in fact, Starck commented about this juicer that it was not actually created to squeeze lemons, but rather to start conversations. This juicer is less practical than what we are normally used to. In fact, there is no container to catch the juice, no lip to be able to pour the juice, and no strainer to catch the seeds. So one has to place an independent glass under this tripod structure in order to be able to capture the juice. Once the fruit is squeezed, the grooves, which are designed on the juicer body, are designed in a way to converge the juice to a central point aimed at the glass situated just beneath it. A form was allowed to supersede function here, and with its futuristic design, the Juicy Salif epitomized domestic kitchens of the late 20th century, and surely started some conversations, no doubt about that. Our next object is the famous Swiss Army knife. Other versions are also commonly known as the Leatherman, for example. This very convenient tool was invented way back in 1891, and today it is still being produced, and also in various colors. Myself, I have a nice metallic shocking pink version of the Leatherman brand, which also comes with a very convenient corkscrew. Well, this Swiss Army knife was invented by Carl Elsener, as I mentioned before. An interesting description of the Swiss knife was by Marissa Mayer, who is a former Google executive, who said that Google should be like a Swiss Army knife. Clean, simple, the tool that you want to take everywhere. I will be reading an abstract from the book What Makes a Great Design about this Swiss knife. The Swiss knife was expressly designed for the Swiss Army, intended for soldiers specifically to open canned food and to dismantle rifles. Elsener's original knife included a blade, reamer, which is a hole piercer, a can opener, and a screwdriver, which all folded into the handle of the knife. Yet the first knife was not well received, and by 1896, Elsener had redesigned it, this time attaching tools on both sides of the handle, using an innovative spring mechanism. The following year, his more functional new knife, featuring the same implements as the first, plus a second smaller blade, a corkscrew, and wooden fiber grips, was welcomed by the army and by the public as well. Reisner named his expanding company after his mother, Victoria, and in 1921 combined her name with the shortened international name for stainless steel, which is inox, from the French acier inoxydable, to make the name Victorinox. Once Reisner had designed his second knife, demand increased and variations proliferated. Our next item surely needs no introduction. Probably it is the most famous phone ever designed, that is, the iPhone. Personally, I got one myself only a couple of months ago, but I must say it is hard to replace once you get used to it. The iPhone was designed by Sir Jonathan Ive, who is Apple's chief designer. Recognized with numerous design awards, thanks to Jonathan Ive, Apple products have become celebrated design icons featured in the permanent collections of museums worldwide, including MoMA in New York and the Pompidou in Paris. Ive holds a Bachelor of Arts from Newcastle Polytechnic, now the Northumbria University. Side note, where I also got my master's, and he was awarded an honorary degree in the year 2000. In 2003, he was named Designer of the Year by the Design Museum London and awarded the title Royal Designer for Industry by the Royal Society of Arts. His latest achievement came in 2012, where he was given even a knighthood for his services to design and enterprise by Princess Anne, and is now known as Sir Jonathan Ive. So, what makes the iPhone so special? In the 1980s, Apple's co-founder Steve Jobs had already predicted that cell phones would become as important as the personal computers. So, of course, why not merge them? And the iPhone was born. Following a number of experiments, Jonathan Ive created an accessible and ergonomic form which could accommodate the new technology of the touchscreen, which makes the phone very user-friendly and everything is accessible by either tapping or touching the screen. Within a year of its launch, the iPhone was named Invention of the Year by Time magazine. To close the program for today, I chose the most famous perfume of all time, and I'm referring to the Chanel No. 5, which was launched in 1924 by Gabrielle Coco Chanel. This was the first synthetic perfume to be launched by a fashion designer, and Gabrielle Chanel designed the bottle for the perfume herself. Famous movie stars and icons like Marilyn Monroe, for example, helped marketing this perfume, especially with her very famous comment when she was asked what does she wear when she goes to bed, and she replied that she wears some drops of Chanel No. 5. I will be reading an abstract from the book by Susie Hodge again. So, as mentioned, Gabrielle Chanel designed the bottle herself. The bottle contrasts with the contemporary ornate and feminine designs. The plain, rectangular form was probably inspired by the beveled Chervet toiletry flacons and the whiskey decanter used by her lover, Arthur Capel, as well as glass pharmaceutical vials. The bottle retains its modern aura despite changing fashions. The octagonal stopper, created in 1924, recalls the shape of Place Vendôme in Paris, the location of Hotel Ritz, where Chanel lived intermittently from 1920. The Chanel No. 5 bottle was deliberately angular and understated. Machine-made and mass-produced, it embraced modernism in all aspects, even the black sans-serif text of the label, following Chanel's own motto, which says, "Always remove, always strip away, never add." The design has remained more or less the same. The first bottle, sold only to select clients, had small, slightly rounded shoulders. In 1924, when Parfum Chanel was established, it was adjusted slightly and given geometrically faceted corners to reflect contemporary Art Deco tastes. I find this really fascinating, as with perfume bottles being so beautiful and decorative, Sometimes one is almost tempted to buy the perfume, not for the perfume itself, but just because the bottle is so nice. Considering how much design and artistic and decorative effort is taken normally in designing these really beautiful and innovative perfume bottles, which are being exploited to market the perfume as much as possible, well, Chanel, by doing the opposite, really managed to create an iconic, timeless classic. I would like to conclude the program by quoting the same Gabrielle Coco Chanel, who said, "In order to be irreplaceable, one must always be different." So, I urge you to join us next week for our second program of Savoir-Faire. I hope you enjoyed this information. And I remind you that this program is being brought to you by the History of Art Department, University of Malta, under the coordination of Dr. Giuseppe Scambri Bonacci, who is also the Artistic Director for the Mlina Biennale 2015. And I remind you that these programs will be available as webcasts on the Campus FM website, which is MaltaUniversityBroadcasting.com, and you will be able to find all the past programs from this website. And I remind you again that you can follow the images by going to www.melfarrugia.com/wix.com/savoirfaire. See you next week.